Welcome to the New Zealand Tech Podcast, presented by Paul Spain of Angus.
Welcome along to the New Zealand Tech Podcast. This is episode 155. I'm Paul Spain, and with me today is...
Owen Williams from Wellington.
Great to have you on the podcast, Owen. It's been a really long time since we've had you on. So welcome back.
155 episodes.
Yeah, it's been, must have been at least 100 episodes ago that we had you on the podcast. So hey, this is great. Now, a few things have changed in your world. Now, when we were talking to you then, you were writing a little bit for some online publications. You've changed where you work during the day and what you do from a journalistic perspective. So maybe you could just fill us in there with your connections to the tech world in New Zealand and internationally.
My day job, I work at Xero. I'm an infrastructure engineer, and this is actually a bit of news for you too, Paul. So I did do a lot of freelance work, but I've actually just joined the NextWeb as a full-time weekend editor. So that's pretty exciting.
You're going to be Xero full-time during the week and full-time on the weekend. For the NextWeb. That's pretty cool. They're a very well-respected sort of international publication covering what's happening in the tech world. So that's great. Congratulations.
So I wanted to put them both in, you know. Xero's awesome and so is the NextWeb. I didn't really want to leave either. So here I am working all the time. But no, it's great. It's cool to work with them and I love it. So very excited.
Excellent. Well, let's jump into the news. We've held off the podcast a little bit this week because there's a couple of announcements that were lining up just with when the podcast was due to go out. Now, first one that you probably haven't had a play with yet, but something I wanted to cover off that I've been playing with over the last few days is Sony's new 3D viewer. This is basically a headset that you put on, and you're looking at two HD screens that are HD rather than full HD, but still a pretty nice resolution. And you can hook that basically into any HDMI source. So it might be into Xbox or PlayStation for gaming. It might be into your Blu-ray player to watch movies in 3D. Could be into your computer. So there's a whole lot of things you can do with it. It's due to launch fairly soon. I haven't seen the New Zealand pricing, but about $1,000 US is what we're seeing on the American side. Actually, I think it's probably coming in the $1,700 to $1,800 range here in New Zealand.
Yeah, it looks like it.
I thought I'd give that one a mention because it's one of the newest things that we've been looking at here, and I think it's very cool. Now, the other device that we talked about recently was the Oculus Rift, and that tries to do some of the same sort of things, but it's designed more for immersive gaming, and it's at the moment got a lower definition screen and only available to the developers. So in terms of products that are available in the market right now or about to be, the Sony 3D Viewer is pretty cool. And it's got wireless HDMI, so you don't have to actually be sitting right next to the source. If you've got a Blu-ray player in one place, you want to be across the room or you want to walk around, which I wouldn't recommend because this thing covers all your eyes and everything, and it takes you into another world, really. So
does that work with all the PlayStation and everything, does it?
So, yeah, because it's HDMI, basically anything that can do an HDMI output it can do. And if you've got something that does 3D, like a 3D Blu-ray player, or you can do that also with PlayStation.
That's incredible.
You can hook it in and you're actually getting that 3D sort of experience. And it's like being in a cinema in terms of just how big it looks. I mean, obviously the screens are very close to you, but that doesn't sort of get that sort of feeling that it's cramped in. It works out really well. So quite a nice new piece of technology, and I'm sure we'll see a lot more of that stuff going forward.
Yeah, I definitely want to try that.
All right. Well, we'll have to set that up. Now, Apple announcements. Overnight we've had big announcements from Apple. That was sort of really this morning. Last night, Nokia making their announcements. Of course, Microsoft's new Surface products landed in a whole lot of markets around the world from midnight Monday, and New Zealand being the first in the world to kick that off. So that stuff's landed here. And of course, we had Windows 8.1 and Server 2012 R2 that sort of became available internationally late last week. So we'll dive into an interview about that later on with Brad Boris from Microsoft. We've got a chat with him we'll jump into. But Owen, with you, really keen to chat through your opinions on the on these other announcements. So
My goodness, this is a lot of devices. It's just crazy. I can't believe it. Like 3 days of just full on brand new stuff. I don't know what you think, but my goodness, like the Microsoft thing was crazy enough. Did you go to the launch event in Auckland?
Yeah, so they had a sort of immediate media launch in Auckland, and I found the enthusiasm there from other media was quite interesting, because in the past we haven't, you know, Microsoft hasn't really been an exciting brand, but we're right, starting to see sort of the excitement come back, I think, around some of the things that Microsoft are doing. And, yeah, I think they seem to have a pretty good story to tell about the new Surface 2, which is their 10.6-inch tablet, which is sort of more consumer and student-oriented, I guess, than full-on professional business, because you can't run all your traditional apps on it other than Microsoft Office. And then the Surface Pro 2. What's been your take on those two products, Owen? Because you've spent some time with the previous generation, with the Surface Pro, which had obviously the much shorter battery life. But there's a bit of a move forward with the sort of specifications and so on in these new models.
Yep. So I've got mine coming on a Thursday, which I'm quite excited about. But it's really interesting. I was just actually having a look at some news about the new Surface 2, and I saw that they actually have hidden the desktop on the latest one. I don't know if you noticed that when you were there, but it's actually really hard to get to it. And one of my biggest gripes about the Surface RT, especially, I mean, they've dropped the RT part from the name now. My biggest gripe about it was that, like, it was really confusing to consumers. Like, you got this PC thing that you couldn't actually do PC things on, but Office was on the desktop, and it's still a bit of a mishmash, and I'm not sure if the app ecosystem is really there to support it yet. Like, it was really good to see Facebook and Flipboard come on board this week, which I think will help a lot with getting these app developers on. But right now, buying something like that, you're really only going to be using the web experience. Whereas on the Surface 2 Pro, it's an awesome device that kind of does everything, but it's also a bit heavy. I don't know if you found that when you were testing it, but it's awesome, but it doesn't quite do the tablet thing quite right because they haven't been able to shrink it yet.
Yeah,
I think
a lot of this comes down to what your habits are and what other technologies you're used to using. I've just folded out the Surface 2 in front of me, and you've got these two heights with a kickstand, which I find quite nice. So I've just managed to kick it back on a little bit more of a tilt here. And yeah, it's that sort of flexibility is certainly something that helps. In terms of hiding the desktop, I mean, what it did when I moved to the Surface 2 is it pulled through my configuration from the cloud from my original Surface RT, which I thought was really nice. It came up, would you like to, pull through? And I'd used two different Surfaces in the past, and it let me basically pick one of them and pull the configuration through. And it laid out my home screen with all my icons and apps and so on exactly where they were previously. So that cloud integration side is actually starting to work really, really well when you move from one device to another. I mean, I take your point around apps. There's definitely been some holes for them, but, you know, they're now up around 100,000 apps, and you know, they seem to be filling a lot of the gaps. And where they don't, they have that benefit that the browser that's built in to both the Surface Pro and the RT has that Flash support. So you can still access things without an app and still get a pretty good experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think this certainly the Surface 2 is a really nice device that jumped to a full high definition screen, coming in at $649 New Zealand dollars for a 10.6-inch tablet. I think for the quality of the hardware,
it's pretty compelling.
I think that's a very, very fair price. And you've got the ability to plug it into a bigger screen. You've got the USB port and micro SD there, so it's really expandable as well. I'm sure you've got to pay extra if you want the keyboards. And I think most people probably will. But that's the same with virtually every other, you know, tablet we've seen, you know, in the market in the past as well, that you'll pay extra to get a keyboard. You get an iPad and you want that Bluetooth keyboard for it, you know, you go out and buy that. And certainly the integrated keyboard experience is nicer than those traditional sort of Bluetooth keyboards we've had in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. I it's actually really interesting because I thought the Surface 2 was really great in that regard. They listened to what everybody was saying about the Surface RT. If you look at it, it was a bit slow. The screen wasn't very good. It was just a bit, it wasn't very good compared to the competition. But if you look at the new one, it's actually, they've filled in all the gaps. They've got the apps coming along. i11 is actually really good.
It's a great browser, isn't it? Yeah, Internet Explorer 11, they seem to have, address sort of any of the shortcomings that were there in the past. You've got a lot of cloud synchronization type pieces in there as well. And you've got this reading list capability to be able to grab bits and pieces and put them aside to read later, which is great.
Yeah, and it automatically updates, which is something that we've wanted for how long? Like, it's great that they've finally gotten to the point where they're actually really serious about making a browser. The only thing that I find a little bizarre about the Surface 2 is that now that Nokia, on a bit of a segue here, has announced their one, the Lumia 2520, it's almost like they're competing with themselves. Like, there's a Nokia one and a Windows one. It's a bit weird.
Microsoft don't own Nokia yet, and you know the things that that we're hearing is that Nokia are just getting on and doing their business, and at some point it's likely that the Nokia acquisition is going to go ahead, but in the meantime I think this is really good. And the thing with the Nokia one, and we'll chat a little bit more about that. We can segue across to it actually. The thing about it is a 4G LTE product, so it's quite different from the current Surface products that don't have any 3G or 4G built in. Although that's coming in the new year, we're told. So I think it's good having other products, and you know we're seeing products from Dell and Lenovo, HP, various vendors, Acer and Asus. Those ones are all working really hard to innovate and come up with great products. And I think it would be a real pity if the only tablets running Windows we could get were Microsoft products. You know, they don't fill all the gaps for everyone at the moment. In the same way, to some degree that people want something different in a phone than the iPhone. Not everyone in the world wants to have an iPhone. There are other vendors with other choices and different products and screen sizes and so on. So, I think it's good and actually probably helps Microsoft rather than hinders them. I mean, they've got a reasonable fit there. What that picture will look like longer term, because we've got HP, for instance, now saying that Microsoft are competing with them directly, and similar noises from other vendors. So those guys have built their businesses on Microsoft. I don't think they're going to stop making Windows products anytime within the next 12 months or so. That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely an interesting move, I would say. I don't know if you've looked extensively at this Nokia one, but it's just an incredible device. I mean, in terms of if you look at the market right now, the iPad is really, I mean, it's the premium quality device, and I'd say this is the Windows ecosystem's premium device. It looks beautiful. That unibody plastic or the polycarbonate style thing they're doing, really nice screen, the LTE, it all just kind of starts adding up. I think especially 16 hours of battery, I mean, that's crazy. Even Apple doesn't promise that kind of thing. I'm pretty impressed. I definitely want to try one at least.
Yeah, no, I think I'm looking forward to seeing that sort of hands-on. And, of course, all we've really seen is sort of videos obviously some reviewers that have been in Abu Dhabi and able to have a look at these things directly. So what else have Nokia announced? They've also announced the Lumia 1520 that have been rumored. now, this is a big 6-inch. So this is bigger than the Galaxy Note, right, in terms of...
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
In terms of a screen, and people always comment how big the Galaxy Note was with its 5.7, well, originally 5.5 with the Note 2, 5.7 with the Note 3, and this is a six inch screen, and they've put in that 20 megapixel pure view camera, which is, you know, really taking a real camera, not a smartphone camera, and putting it into a phone. So a pretty hefty device.
Yeah, yeah.
What's your take on that? Are you a fan of these, the, you know, bigger types of devices? I know you sort of quite love the iPhone form factor and yeah. You know, from a software perspective, but you know, how do you think this is going to go into the market?
I think it's really interesting. I think Windows Phone is really awesome, so I'm a big fan of what they've done. In terms of phone manufacturers, they've actually finally gotten to the point where they're so different and they're so unique that you can really, they're doing the thing with what that Apple does, where they relate it to the user, how it makes them feel, how you can customize the phone, and it's really, really cool in that regard. I think Nokia is doing a very similar move to what Samsung does to fill out every screen size possibility. They're competing in almost every area. And if you look at, I think they said the suggested price for the Lumia 1520 in the US unsubsidized was $350. I mean, that's cheap.
No, the 1320 was coming in, I think, at that sort
1320,
of price
point. Okay.
The 1520
yeah, yeah.
was about $750 US. So
I was going to say, I thought that was ridiculous.
Yeah, it is at that top end of pricing, but it also is from a specifications perspective as well. So, I don't think they're going super cheap in those regards. I think, you know, Nokia are working hard to get people across to high end products, but yep. not at the expense of profit, shall we say. So, you know, they could, I mean, from what we hear, the prices of producing smartphones mean there is actually quite big profit margins. And I guess the point is, when you compare the, you know, the top smartphones with the tablets, we're paying a real premium for our phones, because you take a tablet, which is in many ways just a smartphone with a really big screen from a technology perspective, and the tablets are actually at lower price points, and certainly that's the case we're hearing here between the Lumia 1520, which is the 6-inch smartphone or phablet, if you want to use
it's almost a tablet now. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, you are really encroaching into the price point. It's interesting where those price points sort of land, because the 2520 is considerably cheaper than the 6-inch handset. I think the numbers I've seen are $499 as the US price point for that 4G tablet. I mean, that sounds really good. What it'll be when it hits New Zealand, you know, tax and so on goes on. I'm not sure. And it's another $149 US for that. Keyboard power, you know, the powered keyboard, which will bump it up to that 16 sort of hours that you were talking about. But you know, even so, you put those two together, and it's still cheaper than actually buying the smartphone, the 1520. Now, you did mention the lower price point, and that's what $349 US
13 yeah
is for the Lumia 1320, which has the same big screen but an HD screen rather than a full HD screen.
Right.
Some lower specs there in terms of a more normal camera and so on. I mean, that could hit New Zealand at $600 price point, maybe. Is there anything is there anything else that really is going to compete directly with that sort of price point? That seems pretty sharp for what is effectively a pretty high end cell phone, right? smartphone.
It undercuts the Galaxy Note. It undercuts the S4. If they can bring it down to that point, they're below even the 5C, which is really expensive. I can't think of much else in that price point. They're smack in the middle there between premium and cheap. We've got like the 520, which is a really interesting handset. It's one of the most popular Nokia handsets in New Zealand. So I think it's quite a good opportunity to get people on a semi-premium handset. It's almost like upselling from that lower point.
Yeah. I mean, there hasn't been a whole lot that's really awesome in that mid price point. So no, it is. I think it's good to see, and it's good to see the competition that we're getting across the vendors now starting to deliver a much broader range of products than we had even 12 months ago. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Now the other thing, just on the Nokia front, from their announcement overnight was their Asha phones, and these are their low end or their feature phones, and they don't usually get much attention, but their price points sit between $69 and $99, and these are they virtually are smartphones now, because they've got a touch screen. They're coming with a whole range of apps available: Facebook, Twitter, WhatsApp, Hear Maps for navigation. There's a whole bunch of stuff there, but they're coming in at the sort of price point that we say virtually anyone can afford a smartphone, but certainly in some markets that's not so true, particularly in developing countries. $69 to $99 for those phones. How do you think they'll go?
I think they will sell quite well, and I think that goes back to what I was saying about Nokia really covering every price point off. They're covering off the really cheap phones right up to the top, and I know they don't run Windows Phone necessarily, but I think Asha goes with Nokia to Microsoft when they do the sale.
I believe so.
Yeah, I wouldn't undervalue those customers. They can, and I think this is the thing, like, you can always slowly upsell them into that, Lumia 520 market, or even slightly higher on the 1320 eventually. So I think it's a good strategy. They're getting these people on their brand. It'll be interesting to see if they keep selling as well when it's a Microsoft Asha, but I mean, you can't really predict that.
Yeah, I think there's some interesting things there around what I've read, the arrangements with the Nokia brand, and it sounds like I think the Nokia name stays with the Asha handsets, but not with the Lumia handsets, and I would have actually thought the Nokia name had a much more of a sort of a cachet associated with it in the phone field than Microsoft, because Microsoft aren't known for it, but maybe they believe a bit of a fresh start there with that association with the Lumia brand will help them. I don't know.
It is coming across. So Microsoft is bringing in the Asha brand, and they're coming with 200 million users. So, I mean, it's an opportunity, that's for sure.
Yeah, but they're keeping the Nokia name apparently associated with the Asha phones. So,
makes sense.
All right, now for the big announcement that certainly will get the most mainstream media have been the announcements from Apple. Overnight, and this morning New Zealand time. Now, first up on the software front, OS X Mavericks, which has been floating around for some time with developers to be able to test out. This is OS X version 10.9, so we're now 10th iteration. Starting at 10.0 up now up to 10.9 of OS X. It's now getting pretty mature, but have you had much of a play around with Mavericks at all yourself yet?
I haven't had a play with it necessarily, but I had a look at the features and I kind of thought, okay, Windows has had that for a while, but I actually haven't owned a Mac yet, and as soon as they announced the new Retinas this morning, I went out and bought one. I think all those features that they're finally getting, the multiple monitor support, all that stuff is really starting to get people like me, who are total tech nerds, really interested in that, I guess, kind of OS. They've got the full dual screen things. Enterprise people are going to love that. they've got all these finder tabs. It's just better for power users, and I'm kind of excited. I mean, it's totally nerdy, but it's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I think Apple are keeping themselves really really competitive, and I always thought, how can Apple keep up when the number of users using OS X compared to the number of users using Windows is such a small percentage? How can they afford to pour so much into R&D to keep up? Surely they're gonna fall behind. I guess there are different areas where there are differences between Windows and OS X, where you can state, well, this one's better or that one's better. But I think they're actually, considering that, they're keeping up very well. And I guess that, to a large degree, they're funded reliant on the sales of the Mac hardware as well. So all of that, plays back in terms of their R&D. But they seem to be doing a couple of interesting things. One, this upgrade is free. Now, this is the first time we've seen a point upgrade like this that's free from Apple, right?
That got cheers from the crowd. Everybody freaked out. Everyone on Twitter is overwhelmed. What would be really interesting with this is if they decide not to charge for the next one. There's a lot of buzz online at the moment about it. It's like, will Apple charge for the next one? And because if you look at the phone market and you look at the tablet market, people expect them to be free in that space. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what Microsoft does with Surface. Like, 8.1 was a free upgrade for Surface RT, but what will happen with the next one? Will you get Windows 9 for free? I don't know. But it seems like Apple has come to the conclusion maybe that they can just keep releasing their updates for free because everyone's already buying their hardware anyway. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I think the biggest takeaway from this is, wow, they've actually updated everybody from Snow Leopard up. They're moving everybody onto one platform. They've unified it. There's no fragmentation. I mean, there's going to be people that don't upgrade, but that's an impressive move. Imagine if Microsoft gave everyone Windows 8.1 right back to Vista for free. That would be ridiculous.
Well, I think the difference from Apple's perspective is this will drive hardware sales for them. So they'll give people the new stuff, and people are like, well, actually, I need a newer machine for this, and you have to go back to Apple to buy that hardware. There's not that choice. Yep. Where, obviously, Microsoft doesn't make a cent when you buy hardware, unless you're buying Windows with it, etc., and so on. So there's a bit of a picture there in terms of how that how that happens for Apple, and I think it's fascinating to see the way, particularly at the consumer end, that we're seeing the cost of products from a software perspective really shrink in recent years, and in some cases sort of disappear or get paid for in other ways. We've got Microsoft, who they don't exactly give away Microsoft Office, but it feels like that the deal they've done in the last week in the education market in New Zealand means most students in New Zealand now will be able to get a free copy of Microsoft Office to run on Mac or on Windows. The Windows-based tablets now, including Microsoft Office, as part of that sort of purchase price. And then we've got the Office 365 business level subscriptions that for a pretty low price includes Office and email services and cloud storage services for documents, video conferencing, and so on, all sort of bundled into this price, which you could easily say, well, the amount that's being paid, that's enough for the email and the etc. on its own, or it's enough for the video conferencing on its own, or enough for Office on its own, but you're getting all of those things sort of thrown in at that price. So there's to some degree a bit of a devaluing across the board in software, and I guess that's part of the reason why Microsoft are ensuring that they're getting a piece of the hardware pie as well.
Absolutely. The really interesting thing about the Apple event today is, moving on slightly, is they also announced that iWork is free with every Mac, and that's, to me, is a very much so a knee-jerk reaction to what Microsoft is doing. They're doing the whole Office comes with your Surface, it comes with whatever you buy for free. Apple is now giving away iWork, they're giving away iLife. It's very aggressive. They're following the leader because I think they know that Microsoft has done a good thing. And I think if they were still selling them separately, it would be a different story, I would say. And also, it comes free on the phone, so it's very aggressive against Microsoft's strategy, which is also the same on Windows Phone.
It is, and it's great to have this competition. I think from a consumer and a business user perspective, this competition is a really good thing. And I think there will be businesses that will say, look, we're going to use iWork rather than Office. I like being free in there as well. I mean, it becomes part of that sort of broader ecosystem that we often talk about. Each platform that's successful generally has a really big ecosystem around it, and that's been one of the issues for BlackBerry. Their main part of their ecosystem, I guess, has been BlackBerry Messenger, which they've now finally made available this week after a few hiccups for Android and iOS. But they don't have that broader ecosystem that Google and Apple and Microsoft have with, music and apps and email, movies and so on, all of these, broader pieces and big app stores. I think that's going to be, part of what helps sort of put, ultimately put the nail in the coffin for BlackBerry, unless they come out of the hat with something really, really soon.
That'd be surprising, wouldn't it?
That would be interesting to see what could happen there. Maybe through an acquisition, somebody acquires them, which has got some of the right assets, then something's possible there. But
yeah, I agree with that.
Having that broader ecosystem is necessary to make it work. Now, other bits that were announced, the Mac Pro, which we heard about earlier on in the year, and this is a crazy looking
machine.
Big button, this sort of small black tube, as it were, for $4,999 New Zealand dollars, you'll get an extremely powerful system. It's got the sort of processing power that come in, top business class servers. You've got, dual, very high end graphics cards with, two gigs of very fast memory there. I mean, this machine is an absolute beast.
Yeah, and it's just a crazy unique design too. It's incredible. I can't believe it. And like, because if you look at the previous Mac Pro, there's massive boxes, and then this guy, it's just amazing what they've managed to shrink down in the last kind of 2-3 years.
It's a complete.
I wish I could get one. It's incredible.
I mean, a very high starting point, but for those that are doing those sort of high end tasks of video editing and so on, and are steering away from the iMac, because the iMac now is very powerful. At a starting point, starts with a quad core processor, goes up in terms of specs from there. The iMac is a good start. As are all of the Macs. Even the MacBook Air now with the current processors. It's got a pretty acceptable amount of grunt for lots and lots of tasks. I'm curious to see how this new Mac Pro is going to sell. Whether it's really going to attract attention. I know it stands out from a look perspective. I think a lot of people in that space actually would have preferred if they stayed with the previous form factor. They had room for putting lots of hard disks inside it, and it just looked like a really professional machine. And although the Mac Pro looks stunning, and yes, I'd absolutely love to have one, the Apple, the question is whether that price point and the form of the machine is something that's going to spin the wheels for those that have got to pick what they need. I mean, there'll be certain requirements where people have just been waiting. People have been waiting a long time for a refresh on the Mac Pro, and I think there will be customers that are just going to go out and order these as soon as they're available. Still a little way off. It's December when it ships, but hey, that's not too far down the track. So for those that are waiting, only a few more weeks to go.
It's very exciting. I definitely want an excuse to get one.
Now, I'm sure there'll be somewhere within Xero where one's needed, and you can make sure.
Yeah, the video department will get one, I'm sure.
Gravitates towards your desk. Now, iPad. Now, I mean, the iPad has just been a massive success. Single-handedly, it has really launched, the tablet market globally, and in the same way really that the iPhone did in terms of really kicking smartphones into really high gear. The iPad has been a huge success, but it's it's been obviously the picture's been changing with what's happened from Google with all of the Android tablets down to very low cost, you know, $100 type devices, and now Microsoft with their products, which they're coming in at some pretty competitive price points and saying, hey, you can also work on this because we're throwing in full version of Microsoft Office. What's your take on what's going to happen? Because we've got, I guess, the two products announced today, the iPad Mini Retina, which takes the iPad Mini to a really, really high definition screen. We're talking sort of the same sort of density as on the iPhone 5 onwards. And then the iPad Air, right?
It's a very interesting thing they're doing. If you watch the keynote from this morning, I think they're starting to feel the pressure a little bit. I think not because they're losing their magic or any of this Apple is doomed nonsense that you'll hear in the media. I think it's because they're just being undercut on price. The iPad is a premium device, and when these Android people come in at $99, when you start getting these $200, $300 tablets, Apple can't compete. If you look at the iPad Mini, I'm not sure if that was so much a price reaction as they actually did need a smaller device as well, but it is very much so targeted at getting down the price without having to diminish the iPad brand, I suppose. It's really interesting.
And it's quite a key size. You know, that 7.9-inch display, I think, when I started using the iPad Mini, to me, that was, this is a great form factor for the iPad to be in. And, they're now selling, I believe, a lot more of the smaller form factor iPads than they are of the original iPad. And, I think that's a key space for them to be competing in. They've got to get that right. Do you have a preference sort of size-wise yourself?
I definitely love the iPad Mini, and I think, I was really interested in all these rumors that Microsoft was going to be making a smaller device, but they didn't actually do it yet. I'd be very interested in a Surface Mini. I don't know how they would do it. I have no idea. But the iPad Mini, I think, is perfect because it's a book. It's a quick email thing. You just carry it around in your bag with your phone. It's very complimentary.
Okay. I'll ask you this question then. What about the price point? So the new iPad Mini with a Retina display starts at $599.
It's expensive.
That's the most expensive small tablet on the market by quite a long shot, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not particularly fond of that, to be honest. I'm just looking at the current iPad Mini, and it's $450, and I think that was compelling. The fact that I know that they've got a new Retina screen in it and all this, but the $450 mark is a really good mark, I think, for them to be in. It's not too much, it's not too little, it's just right.
Covering both of those spaces. I mean, at $450, I'd say that there are going to be very few, if any, Windows tablets that are going to be able to undercut the iPad Mini. They're more going to be at that iPad Mini Retina type price point. Yeah. And I mean, the specs of the new iPad Air and the iPad Mini are really good. These are top end devices. They've got high definition cameras for video chat, FaceTime, Skype, and the like. They're pretty snappy from a performance perspective, and of course you've conveniently got that option of 3G or 4G across the board as well, which a lot of the other products, as we were talking about earlier, Surface and so on, don't necessarily give you that option at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. It's just in the right place, I would say. And the other thing that I wanted to point out that's really interesting about the Mini is I think a lot of people who purchase those kind of devices are buying them because it's not a Windows laptop, if you get what I'm saying. Like, they don't want the hassle and the fuss of a Windows computer. Obviously, you can't get one at that price point. But an iPad, it just works. Everybody knows the iPhone. Everyone knows iOS. It just works. You're just going to go and read a book. You're just going to go get your email, all that kind of thing. And I think that's why the iPad Mini is particularly nice. You've got your books. You've got your email. You've got your your photos and all this, and it's just with you.
So you're saying you don't think that the Windows modern experience or Android is as reliable?
I don't think Android is as reliable at all. It's weird on the tablet still. There's not much selection there as well. I think that's they're struggling with the same thing. And Google's about to relaunch a new tablet store to combat that. But I think this is the thing. People just want something to work at that form factor. They're on Windows PCs all day. I'm not sure that maybe Microsoft hasn't quite sold me on the modern experience. I like it, but I don't think it's perfect yet. It can be a little bit confusing, a little bit overwhelming. Everybody knows how to use an iPad. Just works.
Yeah, and I think there's that thing of people know that experience, and you know, so yep. many people use an iOS device already that it is reasonably easy for them to you know, to both you know keep selling to existing customers and to you know and to sell to new ones. That said, though, I think we are seeing people that have been an iPad user that have also you know moved in and are buying one of the other platforms too, whether it's on a price perspective or whether it's you know that they're looking for some of the features that you know that Windows brings in terms of Office and so on, and probably hence part of their story for giving away iWork and making it available on every platform and connected to the cloud as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's awesome, and I'm really glad to see them moving the full size iPad into a nicer form factor. It makes it a lot smaller. It's more compact. It's easier to carry around. It looks like the iPad Mini, which is awesome. I'm just a bit sad it doesn't come in gold.
Fair enough. Now that probably just about wraps us up.
Yep.
I guess we've also got the iPhone 5S and 5C, which land in New Zealand on Friday morning at 12:01 a.m. And there's all sorts of launch sort of kickoff events being held by Vodafone and Telecom. You know, of course, two degrees as yet haven't come on board in terms of being an Apple partner. So it's Telecom and Vodafone that'll be sort of you know fighting it out for new customers. And of course you'll be able to buy the phones through the through the Apple store as well. So some interesting days ahead, and I'll certainly be feeding. We'll be feeding back on future episodes really around that. I'll be looking forward to getting my hands on the 5S on Friday.
I have one already. It's great.
of course you can get them through other sources to have had them ahead of the New Zealand launch, as we certainly have often done in the past for some of the other. Launches and also Mavericks, which I've got installed actually on the iMac here with me now. Went through that install today. Pretty big down. I think it was
over 5 gigs.
Yeah, over 5 gigs. But of course, our internet connections in New Zealand are slowly improving. And I downloaded this over VDSL, and it was done in probably 90 minutes, something like that. So it wasn't wasn't an all day job like it might have been. In the past, which was nice, and a reasonably quick upgrade install. So there's quite a few interesting things about that, and some of the changes that Apple have made in behind the scenes, as you mentioned, Owen, around support for screen for different having multiple monitors and how that'll work, networking changes, a bunch of other stuff, some of which are quite cool, and will certainly help the Mac to work within networks that are maybe mixed environments that are mixed with sort of Mac and PC as well. So what we're going to do in a minute is jump into that interview with Brad. It's been great to have you on the NZT podcast, Owen. Thank you for joining me again.
Thanks for having me. It was fantastic.
Now, where do we find you online? You're on Twitter. You've got personal blog, and then you've also got the Next Web that you're writing for. So just run us through those URLs.
So I think the best way to find me is at OW. There's a link there, and you'll find everything. And I'm owend.co.nz as well. So.
Okay, so at OW on Twitter or twitter.com/OW, and we'll track you down from there. Hey, well, thank you very much, and we're going to jump into this next interview now, but thank you, and we'll look forward to next time we can chat to you on the NZ Tech Podcast.
Thanks very much. See you later.
See ya. And now we have a segment that will be particularly of interest to those who are IT pros or involved in business technology.
So right now with Bradley Burrows from Microsoft. Welcome along. Great to have you here. It's been some time since you've been on the New Zealand Tech Podcast.
Hey, buddy. How are you, man?
Original founder. Great to have you back, mate.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
Now, wearing your Microsoft hat today, we're keen to hear a little bit about the newest that fits into your area. So maybe you can just remind us where you fit in at Microsoft, what your role is.
So, yeah, as you mentioned, I'm Bradley Burrows, and I'm the business group lead for the Windows Server and Tools and Azure division. So basically what that long title means is that I have everything from the Windows Server, the System Center, the Developer Tools, the SQL, the Power BI, and all the public cloud stuff in my portfolio. Then I look and run those business units for New Zealand.
Cool. Last week was the big launch of Windows 8.1, mm-hmm. and then on the server side, Windows Server 2012 R2, some other bits and pieces in there as well, such as the new version of System Center. That's what I'm keen to chat to you about today.
Yeah, cool. I mean, so we had Intune release, what they're calling Wave F, I think, at the moment, really fancy name on that one.
So that comes out quite regularly, doesn't it? Being a cloud-based product, yeah. It iterates a lot quicker than the traditional Microsoft package product software, which even that has accelerated. I mean, it used to be we'd get a new version every 3 or so years of a product, sometimes 4 or 5. How often are those some of those cloud products like Intune releasing?
So yeah, Intune's definitely moving to more of that 6 to 12 week release cycle. So 6 weeks you're getting a feature, every 12 or so weeks you're getting a major update. Things like Azure, you're seeing new things, which is our public cloud offering, every week is there announcements coming through. So we had Oracle on Azure, Linux on Azure, all that sort of stuff.
And this is a product that, I guess, in many ways competes with what Amazon are doing with all of their cloud services, AWS and so on.
Yeah, from the public cloud side of it, it's definitely Amazon. They've got their own cloud infrastructure and everything. They obviously run Linux and Windows workloads on top of that. So they compete, but then they also partner, if that makes sense, because obviously they're paying for Windows workloads on there. And then we obviously have our competing product, which is platform as a service, infrastructure. And you and I were talking before the show is, it's 22 elements that make up this thing called Azure from that side of things. It's a big beast that we could spend days talking about, and I don't want to bore you on it. But yeah. it's a cool way to look at the technology. And I think for New Zealand and Australia, we're getting the data centers down this part of the world, Sydney and Melbourne, which are going to come next calendar year. And I think that'll be a good sort of bridge for us to really experience the services that I think, we've always talked about what's happening in the US and in Europe and stuff, and we'll actually get to have those high-speed links that the rest of the world's enjoyed for quite a while. But from the
because it certainly
side,
makes a difference having those servers, close to home. The closer they are, the better the performance is, right?
Yeah, well, we're at the bottom of the world, so no matter what, vendor agnostic, latency is going to be an issue, right? Unless you've got it in country or close by, it doesn't matter whether you're Google, Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, whoever it is, we've still got to put up with those long bits of wire to Hawaii or to Singapore, wherever we're going. And if we can get those things closer to us as services, that'll make life. We'll be able to enjoy things like Netflix, for argument's sake, or something working properly in this part of the world, which would be great.
Sure. Now, I guess Amazon sort of made that announcement. They're moving into Australia, and now that they've started getting their infrastructure there. How far away is it until Microsoft has something in there? Is it sort of beginning of the year, end of the year, or is that? Anyone's guess, or is it secret squirrel?
It is still secret squirrel. I think the biggest thing is there's so many moving parts. We are building two data centers at once, and the dates are moving, and we're trying to get them as soon as possible. But the actual dates itself, not even I actually know those, and I'm on the V team for them, the virtual team. But it all is secret squirrel stuff. We obviously want to do a big bang announcement when we do have those available, when we do have the pairings and the partners and everything up on board. So, but it will be next year, sometime next year.
And so you're building data centers in what, Sydney and Melbourne?
Yep, those are the two.
Yep. Okay. So I guess for people in the past that have always had their own servers, having that infrastructure available closer is basically opens up another option, rather than people having their own infrastructure for everything, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I think the infrastructure is a some people get confused by what it actually means, and it can mean different things for different businesses. We've actually got some New Zealand businesses right now that are running all of their servers. So they've picked up all their on-premise servers, virtualized it from VMware, and they've put it all up on Azure. infrastructure as a service. So they've got whole businesses, and all they run in is with an iPad, an Android, or a Windows device in their organization. And then we've got some guys that are putting storage up in the cloud, so cheap storage, you know, 6 cents a gigabyte, whatever it is, you know, up in the cloud, which is just scary. Or, you know, people are doing things just like Active Directory.
So I guess it comes down to, I mean, each business, it's going to be a different fit in terms of,
totally,
you know, what is right for them in terms of where they should have their servers, what sort of internet connectivity they have. I mean, everything has to be a fit to those business requirements.
It's right? All about risk mitigation and how comfortable you are as a customer or a partner like you to put it up there and be confident that they're going to do it. And at the end of the day, that's the biggest challenge for New Zealand customers. All of this cloud stuff's unknown. We haven't really done a lot of it, and we are trying to, I think everyone is trying to educate our customers and partners around how to do it, whether it's Microsoft again, Amazon, whoever.
Great. Now jumping back to last week's launch on Friday, Windows Server 2012 R2.
Yes.
What are the bits for you that sort of stand out as being most interesting? You know, we chatted before, a lot of lots of things that make up Windows Server, but this release brings, you know, some areas that are getting a refresh, you know, and some new features. What are the things that sort of standing out from your perspective?
I think the big things for me right now was I really like the Azure integration. So what that does now is that you can just add your Azure subscription into it, and you then natively can do things like backup to the cloud straight off the server. So you don't have to worry about it being a convoluted process, as it used to be for doing any cloud-based backup softwares, whether it's, you know, Microsoft or a third party, and you've got that native integration now. The syncing, or the ability to pull those services, so if you're buying media as a service, for argument's sake, you can pull that through. Storage spaces, you and I were sort of having a natter around this, and it's interesting to see, for people out there, imagine if you can have USB disks, SSDs, traditional hard drives all stacked up, and then across the top of that you could have almost like a virtual storage layer, and it just presents that as D drive, for argument's sake, but it's made up of all these other disks that you can then add more disks to it. I think that's a good way of explaining it. That's really cool, because one of the challenges I think we've all had in the past is, oh, my 1 terabyte disk's run out of space. You know, you back it up, you format, you put a 2 terabyte, you move it across. Now you can just add it in dynamically, and it's kind of cool. And that came from the home server product that you and I both loved and enjoyed. And that's from that space. I think that's there. I think for me, the big one, though, that I'm actually becoming a bit of a fanboy of is Windows Server Essentials R2. I'm actually running this, that's running now my home network. And this is the SMB product, which has the awesome dashboard, all the Office 365 integration, and all the Azure integration. But when I want to, I can upgrade it. I can just put a Windows Server standard key in there, and it flicks it over to a Windows Server standard. And that's kind of cool from I can grow and scale, but all the cloud stuff's built in there. So I'm a big fan of Essentials R2 as a product line. But on top of that, you've got new Hyper-V, you've got Hyper-V replicas, I think you've got the disaster recovery.
Yeah, the Hyper-V replica stuff, that I think that's one of the most exciting things probably around Windows Server for a lot of people, in terms of being able to mitigate a lot of risk, right? Being able to replicate, you know, their virtual servers to different locations, or, you know, secondary servers and so on. Are you seeing much uptake of that in New Zealand?
Yeah, well, we're definitely seeing, say, from site A to site B. So people are replicating an image from, you know, one to A to B. But what we're also seeing now is, because of that whole cloud integration, people are going from the offsite up into the cloud. So you're going A to B, B to C. So what that means is that, you know, you can replicate from, say, Auckland to Wellington as a disaster recovery. But then you can sort of actually go, no, we need to have that data retention, so we can go from B and just replicate it straight up, and it's the same piece of software that does everything. All you're doing is paying for the service. So that's really kind of cool, and it is definitely getting a lot of interest, and also the ability to do, it does all the compression now on the fly too. I think in the past it would copy the 1 gig and try and move 1 gig, which, as we know, would probably take quite a while. This does compression, and it can move it really quickly from A to B and B to C. So,
yeah, and there's more flexibility around, you know, how often it does it and so on as well.
Yeah, totally. I think it's 15 to 30 seconds you can alternate it, and then into the clouds 30 minutes or something like that. So you can set all those settings up, and the replica's kind of cool. And the virtualization stuff obviously all supports Linux now. So you've got the open source community coming on board. Like Azure, you can buy Linux from Microsoft, which is kind of a weird paradigm, along with, you know, Oracle or Microsoft. You've now got full Linux support on the Hyper-V straight out of the box now, which is kind of cool as well from that side of things.
So that means from a backup perspective and so on that it's, you know, Linux is treated as equal to Windows in totally. many regards.
Yep. Yeah, totally. Okay. It's I don't want to say it as a native operating system, but it's seen as equal is a good way to say it across. You know, when you're running it, it just treats it as a full blown guest that it has all the benefits and rights of backup movement, all the elements. You know, it's all nicely plugged in. I know the guys in Redmond were working to help influence on the version of the kernel. I think from memory, and if your listeners beat me up on this, but I think it was like the Linux kernel 3.3.1, I think it was, they helped put some of the components in it to allow this all to work. So it's kind of cool from that respect to see that the recognition of the communities working there. It's kind of cool.
So Windows Server really goes from that lower end, and I think Windows Server Essentials is up to, 25 users?
Yep.
Really up to the very, very high end now, right? I mean, the high performance server, where does that fit in?
So it's kind of interesting. What we're actually seeing is in our mid-market or our 0 to 50 users, we like to profile everyone out there as the number of users you've got in a business. We're actually seeing a lot more of those smaller businesses buying the high-end products. So what we call our data center products, so those high-end, high virtualization, people are buying that because you get unlimited virtualization. That's how we differentiate our products now. If you buy Windows Server Standard or Windows Server Data Center, you get the same features. None of this tiering as, pricing everything in the old days. So it's virtualization. High-performance computing, it's all gone. It's all moving into that cloud-based environments. You can buy thousands of CPUs to do SETI-type engagements or, video rendering. And that, again, that just plugs straight through. But the data center side of the products is it's been one of the sort of the surprise for New Zealand is that a lot of SMBs, a lot of mid-market, a lot of businesses are wanting, to be able to do the unlimited virtualization side of things. Mm. But it's definitely been the uptake has been astronomical. Windows Server 2.12 and R2 is people are already just installing it already. It's great. Really good to see.
Great. So in addition to the Windows Server release last week was also the System Center product.
Yep.
Tell us where that fits in and why it's important that it was sort of released at the same time.
Believe it or not, in the past we've normally released the OS and then put the management tools a little bit later. This time we've actually got the release cycles where both the server and the management tools are coming out at the same time.
So I guess that means customers that have got the management tools can actually upgrade rather than having to wait for it all to line up, which is I'm sure has been a frustration in the past.
Yeah, we got feedback last time around that, hey, Microsoft, you're releasing the OS, but yet we can't upgrade to it.
We can't back it up. We can't do this.
Exactly. And so, look, we've got that right this time. I think the big thing is that from the System Center product range, it's going to moving into our server management, so it'll manage your servers, and Intune will be our device management platform over time for all devices. And I think with System Center, you're seeing a common theme, which is there's a lot of new features, a lot of new updates, but the cloud integration of being able to manage multiple clouds on-premise, in the cloud, move workloads between it. I think that's been a big update and management that they wanted to do, is to be able to sort of move things across. So, if you wanted to have a web server here, you can move it up into the cloud and pull it back and move it around from that side of things.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's been a long time coming, I think. We've probably spoken about this whole, one pane of glass view, if you like, in inverted commas and marketing terms. And I think we're actually starting, to actually get to the point where the technology's caught up with what the marketing hype was. And it's kind of cool in that respect that customers can actually do this stuff now, and they're not just looking at a marketing slide going, oh, yeah, that'd be great in 5 years. Well, actually, you can actually do it. You can actually, I suppose, inverted commas, live the dream. And actually muck around with that cloud elements and play with it. But look, the integration, the tool sets, the ability to manage VMware, to manage Citrix, to manage open source platforms, all natively built in now. Again, really nice to see the recognition of all the other platforms and that you can actually manage those and look after them in an environment. So it's all out now with the R2 product range, and we'll be moving to these yearly sort of, I suppose, 9 to 15 months slot on-premise, what I call the box products, I think you called them at the beginning, the heavy products in the old days. We're moving to that quick release cycle so we get those features out. One of the common questions I get asked a lot is why? Why are we going so quick? How are we going to keep up? Well, your listeners and partners and customers out there have actually asked us to move this fast. We've been told we're too slow And so we've now got it, we're now getting faster and getting this out there. And hopefully people will appreciate that we're trying to get the features ready for people quickly.
Yeah, well, I think it's important that all these things, you know, line up. We're seeing all the consumer products release really quickly, and all of these things have to actually fit together and work together in order to serve people's businesses. So I think it's a good thing.
It's kind of cool when you think about it. You had Server 2.12, System Center, Intune, Windows 8.1, and updates to Azure, all coming in that sort of 1 week period. And then obviously I think that we announced the week before the new remote desktop client, which now you can do these across iPads, Android devices, which allows you full touchscreen into a Windows environment. So you suddenly get these blobs coming in one big bunch, which actually all works together nicely now, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, no, it's a good thing. All right, well, thank you very much for coming in, Brad. Very good to catch up and great to hear about the new round of Microsoft products.
Cheers, buddy.
All right, cheers.
So that wraps it up for this episode. Thank you everyone for joining us here on the New Zealand Tech Podcast. You can of course find me online on Twitter at Paul Spain. And you can find the NZ Tech Podcast at nztechpodcast.com. We're on Twitter at NZ Tech Podcast. We're on facebook.com/NZ Tech Podcast. So definitely worth connecting with us in those places to keep up to date with news and happenings throughout the week, and to hear updates on new episodes. So thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next week. See ya.